You're listening to Panel Borders on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Alex Fitch, and this is Resonance's weekly show about the world of comics. Today's show continues our month of shows looking at new British comics in our new Sunday night slot. This evening, I'm talking to a pair of brothers who write and draw comics together, and their style is typified by madcap adventures full of whimsy and destruction, aimed at a sophisticated tween-age audience. Robin Etherington has also written licensed comic strips based on characters from Transformers, Star Wars, and Wallace and Gromit, but with his brother Lawrence, otherwise known as Lorenzo, they have created some of the finest comic books for children in recent years. Tonight I'm talking to them about their new graphic novel Baggage, which tells the tale of a hapless luggage clerk who sets off on a mission across a Terry Pratchett-esque city to reunite a piece of lost long baggage with its owner. We're also chatting about their popular strip Monkey Nuts, the Indiana Jones-style adventures of a monkey and a yellow vending machine robot, which was serialized in The Guardian and the subscription-only comic book The DFC. We're also looking at the forthcoming strips they have in the new comic The Phoenix, which is launching next year. The first of the brothers to speak is Robin. Before that, here's a word from our sponsors.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station, who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Speakers Resonance Corner, FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
I'm talking to Robin and Lorenzo Etherington. We're at Daunt Books in Holland Park, where you're about to launch your new graphic novel, Baggage.
We are indeed.
It's the first original graphic novel that's been published as part of the DFC library. How did that come about? Did they approach the various creators who'd been in the DFC and said, although we've been doing these reprint books, if you guys have an original graphic novel in you, dot, dot, dot?
Well, it was an interesting sort of situation because, you know, your listeners might know that obviously the DFC was an ongoing weekly children's comic that was destined to run for about 3 years. And unfortunately, due to the recession and other financial sort of factors, as is always the case, it was curtailed around about 8 months into its scheduled run. And it meant that a lot of creators like my brother and I and many other people sort of kind of drew to a halt in a strange, you know, a stagecoach without the horses scenario, where we had to look around and look for the next projects. And the problem was there was a big gap and a big dearth at that point. Every magazine, every company from Titan to, you know, well, what was Marvel UK, Panini, all these guys, they were all shutting down shop. And we had a long, hard think about it. And we, like most people, you know, had to make the serious consideration of leaving comics and going and getting day jobs and rethinking our approach.
That for very long, though. You know.
We did not consider that for very long, but we did. We did have a meeting together, and that was one option. And the other option was we ignore everything that's happening around us and we pretend that the industry is thriving. So, with that in mind, we sat down and we decided that we would pitch in a brand new book because, you know, David Fickling had expressed early on that, and this is pre the DFC library being approved. He had very early on said, you know, my intention is to bounce back from this and try and bring these books out as some sort of a library. The word wasn't being used, but some sort of a collection of graphic novels. And we knew he was up for it. And I think we sat down and smashed about 15 concepts together, and Baggage was the first one that we went, yeah, that's got legs, that can work. And then put together a full pitch document, drew 4 or 5 pages, didn't we? Sample pages.
Yeah, that was a full pitch. I think we sent it through to him before the last issue of the DFC was actually published, so we moved really quickly. We knew before Christmas, David had said, you know, that there was a sort of axe hanging over the DFC, but as it turned out, it then ran for a few months. But because we were sort of aware of that, I think we started thinking of it. So before the DFC had actually closed its doors, we'd already pitched Baggage in, and he said he wanted it straight away, but it then took about 9 months for us to sign contracts on it. So there was a bit of a lag with that, because obviously David was trying to get the go-ahead to make these books and to make the library. And I think until he had the first three library books agreed, he didn't really want to sign a contract on another book that he then didn't have anywhere to put it. So, by October that year, then we signed contracts. And by that point, we were already, Robin had scripted the whole thing. Mm. So we were good to go and we just started working on it then.
And it was, the strange crossover then happened that David came back and said, well, would you like Monkey Nuts to be, in the next wave of DFC books? And we were overwhelmed to be asked, and we were really hoping we were going to be asked. Yeah. But and then Monkey Nuts overtook Baggage, and because the material was mainly there, we sort of had to rejiggle our schedule and put that book together and then come back to Baggage. Yeah. But yeah, it was a weird kind of to and fro crossover, and it was kind of a really interesting experience because we were very much creating back like we used to create when we were independent comic guys coming through. It was for the love, it was for the passion, and it was a story that we thought would be immense fun. And then it was just wonderful to watch that DSC library series start to grow and start to sell and gather a new generation of fans and start to push the industry back against the recession, which was great. So, yeah, I mean, it is wonderful to be here today and be able to actually, pass this book into the hands of new readers and old readers and start to take it out to the schools and take it out to the festivals and get it around. Because I think, if there is one great news story from all of this, it's that you still have publishers in the UK, like David Fickling, who are going to fight the sort of stigma that is holding back, graphic novels and comic storytelling.
And I suppose doing a graphic novel like Baggage, in a way that must be easier than doing an ongoing strip like Monkey Nuts. I don't take this the wrong way, but reading Monkey Nuts, it did feel at times like you were making it up as you went along.
Well,
Baggage does have a beginning, a middle, and an ending.
I think the funny thing with Monkey Nuts is that it was very...
I'm glad the artist is going to talk about this.
There was a process with Monkey Nuts which was in place where we were going to serialise it, and it was going to run 3 pages a week in the DFC, and at that point we're actually doing those 3 pages a week, sort of in real time, not instead of building it up, and we were all set and we had a nice long lead in, and then the Guardian tie-in came along, and that was a real rush. We had 4 weeks suddenly to have the story up and running. So certainly the first, and to begin with, the editors on the DFC didn't want it to be a continuity story, so the first 24 pages we did of Monkey Nuts were meant to be 4 standalone 6-page adventures, and then we got to the end and they said, right, we're gonna, obviously it's going in the DFC now, actually we really would like it if it was all tied together, so can you now tie it together? So there was definitely a bit of rewriting there, and
fantastic weekend where I was asked to create a 2-page prologue that made sense of everything that had currently gone on. That took some thinking, but apparently a monster magnet solves all script based problems.
Monkey Nuts was very much, it was a seat of our pants because it was everything was happening. We came to the DFC very, very late. We actually were sort of signed on just very close to them really starting to put together the actual final ready issues, and all the other creators coming on them were then going into sort of the second wave of series, not coming until issue 12 or whatever, but we I think insisted and got bumped into the first issue because we really wanted to be in it from the beginning, and so it was kind of our own fault as well, but we the speed with Monkey Nuts was very much we're going to throw everything at the screen and see what sticks and see what we enjoy. And I mean, there was definitely a narrative once we got past those first sort of four double episodes, but with Baggage it was totally different because we had a long lead in and we could write it as a book and we knew it wouldn't be serialized, so it's definitely a different type of book.
I think it's, we can actually talk about it now because it was announced today. I mean, we're joining the Phoenix comic that launches in January.
You preempted my question after next.
Well, maybe I'll hold back for that then, but we are joining the Phoenix with a strip called Long Gone Don. And it's going back to being a weekly serialised, but we are approaching it from the point of view is that it is a scripted book-length adventure. Now, whether or not these become books or not, we live in hope.
We work very hard to make that happen.
We've purposefully kind of... We've looked at the series that we really love, the European series that really stand the test of time, stuff like Asterix. We always harp on about Asterix, but it's for a damn good reason, because it does resonate, and the tales just work. And so we are taking that kind of approach to these sort of 52-page adventures where they have, again, proper beginning, middle and end, because we will have, fans who will come off the back of Baggage and they will have raised expectations on how we tell stories. That's fine. That's how it should be.
Definitely.
And I think we're really enjoying that, aren't we? Yeah. That's great fun.
Yeah, I mean, Long Gone Don is kind of the culmination of... the sort of the 2 years between DFC going down, you know, Baggage obviously was in there being made. Robin has continued to write for Transformers and Star Wars regularly, and we've done stuff in the Dandy, but all that time we've been experimenting and working on our craft. And you know, you give as much as you can to a lot of this franchise stuff, but actually we hold back a little bit, you know, and so I think
we hold back a lot.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And Long Gone Don is getting,
well, presumably there's a certain amount of outrageousness, for want of a better word, that you just can't insert into ongoing licensed narratives.
You're completely right. I mean, Baggage is bizarrely, of everything we've made, it's the straightest story we've ever told.
It features a
rubber duck shaped milkshake cart, a giant meatball. I mean, it's mad, but there's a sense to everything that happens. And I think what we enjoyed about Monkey Nuts was our readers began to expect that they would never know what was coming.
Almost panel to panel, bubble to bubble.
And moving forward, which we want to tap a little bit of that back into what we do. So we have created a universe in Long Gone Don where the really weird sits alongside everyday life. And it is everyday life. And we have one kind of normal element in Don who's in the middle of it, trying to make sense of it. So I think... if you like, it's like all these things. If you like what we do, and we do kind of, you know, wild, wacky adventures, but kind of with some heart, then you're only going to get more of it moving forwards. But I really think we're trying to channel what's in Baggage. It is, yeah. I hope people who enjoy it and see a proper story are going to get a lot more of that from us, because Monkey Nuts was definitely mental. There's no denying.
Well, I mean, one thing about Baggage that I really enjoyed is obviously because you have the length of a book to tell the story, and it means at times you can actually slow down and have an entire page with just one image of it, with a kind of Where's Wally quality to it, where there's so much detail on that page that you can actually spend a long time looking at it, which is quite unusual for modern comics. Normally they're just about turn the page.
And I think with Baggage, I think we definitely, well, Robin I know set out to write, and I think was very successful at writing a story which pulls you along. And I think because we're used to writing serialized strips, you know, the last panel on every page should always be a mini cliffhanger. That's how a good book reads, and that's how a good comic definitely reads. And so that's very much the case with Baggage. So it's actually a much quicker read. You know, Monkey Nuts is quite bonkers, and it's tough to get through, you know, in one sitting, because there's so much. Just like Magic before it, we put a lot in there, whereas with Baggage it's a little bit more linear and it just flows that bit faster. So because you can read the book that much quicker, we wanted, that's exactly what the art is meant to be, there to sort of just slow you down a little bit every time, make you take stock of what's going on, and enjoy the details.
It's that concept
of,
like, you know, the criticism levelled at Jonathan Ross with Turf was always, he's a new writer, you can tell because every single page is full of words. And you know, I can't criticise him, because every writer who's ever been there has done the same thing. You want to put so much in that you inevitably nail every page with dialogue, which is really hard. And even in Monkey Nuts, we were desperate to give it a proper read, which a lot of people weren't doing in their three-page, you know, across comics, full stop, in the last 20 years. Like you say, no one puts detail into the pages, but they certainly don't put story into the words. And we were trying so hard, I think, to correct that, that we almost went too far. With Baggage, if it was three pages a week, you wouldn't be getting tons of story, but there would still be mini stories. And in every three pages, there is a mini move up in story and pace and plot or whatever else. But it was that understanding, as Lawrence said, that I could rip panel, you know, bubbles out constantly and have, you know, nothing in a panel, and then one bubble, and then one other bubble, and have big expansive environments that we can enjoy. And it was that slowing down that made it much more enjoyable to make as well.
Definitely. I think we both pared it down. You know, we both would set out. Robin would set out on a page and write everything he wanted to say on the page, and then strip out whatever wasn't really relevant to the story and didn't really improve characters and bring the story along. And I tried to do the same with the art. It's still very detailed, but hopefully, in comparison to Monkey Nuts and our earlier stuff, that detail's very accessible. You know, you can read it and you can enjoy the detail without being overwhelmed.
Where's Wally is a lovely comparison, because there isn't too much of that in the book, but anytime you see an environment, you can look at it with one set of eyes and it will look clean and clear and everything will make sense. You look at it with another set of eyes and you realise there is just stuff going on everywhere. I mean, it's what made kind of underground comics in the 70s so much fun, was that there was always someone. You look at the early Judge Dredd. I mean, it's hilarious. I remember reading one strip from an early episode, and there were two guys throttling each other throughout the entire episode in the background, commenting on the apocalypse that was going on around them, but just continuing their own private fight. And we love that sense of, there are other little tales being told in that world, and they're not relevant, but they are so much fun, and they expand upon everything that you've read and seen. So I think if people like Lorenzo's you know, detailed artwork, which he's obviously become quite well known for. You get a lot more of that in Baggage, but you also get a clean tail, which is which is fun. It's good. I think it's good.
With that level of detail in the artwork, how long does it normally take you to create a page?
It's
a long book, wasn't it? That was a long book.
Yeah, it was. Baggage was the last book that I'm going to draw. Where my process is that I, up until we've done Baggage and during Baggage, I draw the line art is all hand drawn traditionally, with a light box over a pencil rough, and then scanned in, and the colours are added in the computer in Photoshop. But since Baggage, I've moved into all digital, which is what I've been wanting to do for a long time. I actually spent a lot of time during Baggage experimenting because I wanted it to not be noticeable. You know, I wanted was the reader to notice that there's a kind of a better depth to the world, there's a better depth to the artwork, but it still feels like our stuff, you know. So now it probably, on working on Long Gone Don, I mean, I'm averaging sort of 2 pages a week, which is what we've signed on our contract, although it will be serialized as 3 a week. But it really all depends with our stuff. You know, if it's all talking heads and characters, sometimes that will be quite fast. But you only need to throw in one environment or a crowd scene. And I'm, you know, I get
which I do
up
with immense regularity. I'm quite a git, but it's funny because those conversations took place very, very early on in our working career, which was,
it's, you
know, if Lorenzo doesn't have something on a page that's interesting to draw, he's bored with the page. So I am always structuring scenes so that there is interest.
Yeah.
Because if he's interested, he draws better, everyone has more fun, the readers get more
definitely
out of
it. I think, you know, having done, you know, hundreds of pages we've done now of comics, and, you know, including Malcolm and all that stuff.
It's got me thousands.
What I learned, because it is, you know, it's a constant challenge being a comic artist, and I think the big challenge is not to go stale, you know. And a lot of artists make their careers off the way they draw, and I think what I'm trying to do is make my career off the way I approach drawing, which is to always try and improve and always try to do something different, and not think, you know, I always think that the thing we've just done should always be the best thing we've done, you know. And if I look back at a book from 5 years ago and think, oh, that was amazing, you know, then I think something's wrong there. And so I'm very critical of art, of my own work, you know.
Processes book to book, project to project, and it, you know, it's interesting because from a writing point of view, a lot of people don't think you change that much and don't think you learn that much. But the best thing you can do is work with an artist who is constantly evolving, changing. I mean, you won't even see it in Long Gone Don, but almost every single building that you'll see in the world, Lorenzo's built as a 3D model. Because we were so desperate
Is that because you generally have them destroyed in the script?
Yeah. Well, that does
happen. I think rather a lot.
I think what we do,
and people fall off things. I almost now put it in as a motif that, because I've suddenly started, I get so many mails about people, why are people always falling in your book? Because falling is funny.
It's good. I think that is a, you know, a big part of our books, and it's a big part of the challenge with this type of book, is if you're going to show mass destruction, you know, we always look at comic books as it's like a movie where you've got no budget restrictions, all your actors deliver their lines on time, you know, everybody turns up,
and you've got $100 million budget.
If you're willing to put the time into the page, and that's the beauty. So I think our approach with Long Gone Done now is very much, and very much was the approach with Baggage, is we're thinking about this in the same way that we would think about it if we were Pixar making a movie. You know, we're thinking about the whole world, and the best way to make that believable to the reader is to design way beyond the panel borders, you know. So we know that you could rotate everything in the world and see it from every angle. We know exactly what it looked like, what character will be down that alley that you never even go down, you know.
Without giving too much away, we're building an underworld, and in Baggage we built a city, but we only built the parts in the city that we needed for that very specific scene. But we suddenly realized that we really want Long Gone Don to be a series that we want to keep going back to, because the world itself is very appealing. And so by constructing it, we know that we are building something that we can use and utilise later on, and try and work out roughly how things fit. I'm a big Pratchett fan, from a writer's point of view. It does come through because there's nothing better than having to go back to your earlier books to work out where people were running, because you can't say that is located there, because it doesn't actually work. And I remember him having the first Discworld maps built, and he didn't have a clue where. And he has to get in his assistant to actually put the map together and work out where Vimes was walking on any given day. We don't want to go to that level of detail, but what we really, really want is people to always feel like they are in very safe hands with our books. You should open the cover and be stepping into a world every single time. So I think it comes across. It's going to be exciting.
Definitely.
And Baggage also ends on a semi-cliffhanger. Will there be a volume two at some point down the road?
It is there. Like everything, it's like Monkey Nuts Volume 2. That's reliant on the DFC library continuing. If it does, then that book is ready to go. It's all done, which obviously fans are looking forward to, but we it's out of our hands. Baggage 2 is exactly the same. When we wrote it, it was this two-part tale, and then we turned it into a one-part. And then David said, I really like the idea of it being a two-part tale. So I kind of wanted... I don't like it when you get a book and you get to the end and you haven't wrapped the tale, you haven't wrapped the story. And I think the good thing about Baggage is you do get to the end and they solve the mystery.
Closure.
Yeah, you've got closure. And maybe they never go hunting for this ridiculous thing. But if they do, that again is ready. That story is laid out. And we would love to do it because it features...
I mean, Baggage was only ever intended to be one or two books. It was never... We didn't create the world. We didn't create the characters to be an ongoing series. It was very much we wanted to just tell a story. And so I think, it does wrap up as one story. But the only other thing we would do would be to do the second book and then that would be it finished.
Close the final mystery and then it's done. But if it stays like it is, we're very happy with it. And I think, you know, if the people who've read it so far, no one's come back and gone, oh, well, when's book two coming out? So thankfully that question mark on the end will work for a while. I remember they used to do that with strips all the time. Half my favourite comics ended on the end with a question mark, and for years afterwards I was waiting patiently. But no, it's fine, and I think for the foreseeable future it's going to be long gone done. I mean, the nice thing is contracts change all the time and people very rarely talk about the business bit of it, but it's very important, and we've been doing this for a very long period of time and we've given away a lot of rights. It's what people always do. Young creators, you don't really have a choice. Everyone says you make bad mistakes. Well, you don't. You make the choices that are presented to you. But with Long Gone Don, it's the first one that we really, really own.
It's a great
properly.
Contract. Yeah, it's really good.
And we're looking forward to taking it forward. I mean, we're big animation fans. We're big game fans. We're big. Merchandising
entertainment fans. I mean, I think that's what we try to do with our books, and you know, I think we again that approach that the good animation studios have is you don't make films for kids, you make films that kids can enjoy, but that everybody else can enjoy as well. You know, and I think that's hopefully
the nice thing is now, and that's changing as well. You know, Pixar was that dominant studio, but DreamWorks have been not just nipping at their heels, in many respects they've been overtaking in the last few years. That probably make me unpopular in some circles, but the fact is you look at something like How to Train Your Dragon and it's just smarter. I mean, across the board it's a savvy piece of filmmaking because at last it targeted teenagers, you know, who have been a bit of a lost leader in the Pixar brand. And it felt a little edgy, a little exciting, very, very nicely animated, and had a good little story with some heart in it. So I think looking at what we're doing, there's a home for where we can go. We love making these books and I hope we get to make them for many years. I think we're both very aware that some of these tales would translate very nicely to animation, and it's just a case of if someone comes along and kind of, you know, says the right things. But for now, I cannot wait for people to see, you know, A, get hold of Baggage, and then B, see what we're bringing in 2012, because it's going to be epic.
When you guys work together, you're credited as the Etherington brothers.
Yeah.
Do you?
It's
a
nightmare of a surname.
Robin, do you always write, and Renzo, do you always draw, or do you occasionally mix it up? For example, do you occasionally ink his pencils?
If I ever laid claim to that, I think I'd be shot on sight. No, we from a very early age we brought a big division between the responsibilities. Okay. It made a lot more sense if we just had totally different roles and specifically words and art being separate. So I do all the lettering in the books. I always have done, and I love the lettering. It's the only chance I get to be artistic, if you like, on the page. But we've got a balance now where it works really nicely. And sometimes Lorenzo will go off and do his own projects. I mean, people who followed him online will, you know, looked at plenty of his stuff that's coming out and going around, and he's always got something exciting bubbling along that he's writing and drawing at the same time. And in the Phoenix comic, he's got a series called The Dangerous Adventures of Von Dugan, which is an amazing puzzle adventure series, very reminiscent of the Usborne puzzle adventures from the 90s, and it's amazing, it's incredible. You know, it's wonderful to be part of a creative team where you can turn around and look at what the other person's doing on their own and go, that is some good stuff. And I have nothing to do with it. No, of the two of us, he's the only one who could do both parts. Well, I don't draw.
I think they're all disciplines, and you know, I've been fiddling around with trying to write comics for years, and the fact that I haven't made one yet shows you that it's actually a lot harder than people think. Well, I find it a lot harder, so I don't think you can see any comics being written by me anytime soon.
Stransky is probably the one who gets most asked about, and if that ever happens, I will be fan number one queuing up with my copy to get it signed. But
I mean, it's a nice hard thing about when you work together and you see each other's processes so completely in stuff like Baggage and the other series we work on. It's actually very cool, you know, with Robin writing Star Wars and Transformers and other work with other artists. It's great to see something that I haven't seen at all till I see the final product, and then you read it differently, you know. And when we work,
we actually drip feed the process, so Lorenzo only gets 3 pages at a time. And
so I know the general story. It's the same way that Uderzo worked with Goscinny, which is he never had more than 3 pages of script at a time, because it keeps you as an artist very fresh, you know. Because as an artist, if you know there's a big scene coming up, you're trying to get your head around how to do it, how to deal with the action, how to deal with the detail. You don't concentrate as much on what's right there, but if you only know the next couple of pages, that's the only thing you've got to draw in the future. And so you kind of work very hard on that, and it stops you kind of getting bogged down by just the sort of anti-climax of knowing what's happening. It's great to be working on a book where every week Robin sends me 3 pages of script, and I know overall what the book's about, because we've obviously discussed that early on, but how he takes us there and where it goes and what other bits he adds in, that's always a surprise. So it's good, and it keeps it fresh, which is really important when you're doing very time consuming art.
One of the nice things about working on a weekly as well is that it has to be edited as you go along. I mean, the constraint from a writer is I could write the whole book in one go, but they wouldn't edit it. You know, it would take too long to do that, so they'd only ever edit it in chunks. So, you know, is there any point in me writing it all in one go? Because I'm only going to get better as we go through the stages. So I tend to try and write maybe about 12 pages ahead of where Lorenzo ever is, knowing that he'll get his edited 3 at a time in nice chunks.
Yeah, and you blot it, and don't you? But then you write it.
The whole book will be blotted, and it'll be broken down by chapter, by 3-page chunks. It's always done in threes. Like Lawrence said, Goscinny used to pitch to Uderzo 44... paragraphs, and each paragraph would represent a page. And once it's the same process. Once the artist agreed with what the writer was doing, then the writer was allowed to go away and write. And it's exactly the same here. And it works well, because I know that if he's given it the okay, then whatever he's getting, he's happy with, and it will be cool. And it works well that way, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think it's, you know, there is a nice thing working with someone you know so well. It's a precious thing to be given a page of someone's writing and be responsible for how those characters look and how they act on the page. And I think that it continues to be something. He's the person I want to get the wow from above everybody. You know, it doesn't matter to me who else likes it or doesn't like it, but you've got the person that's seen it the most, that is so close to it. If you can still kind of shown something new in what they've written that they didn't necessarily even know was there, and just reinforce the words with an added sort of level of depth in the art, then that's a great challenge. And it's always the same, every panel, every page, that's always still there. So it's good to work with someone whose opinion you really care about, you know. You get a lot of writers and artists who I think work very separately and don't have that connection.
Pat Mills and I've forgotten his name. Charlie's War?
Joe Cahoon.
Never met, you know, famously never met. And an incredible meeting of two minds, where again both was trying to outdo the other one with the level of research he put in, and the other one with the level of, frankly, the best, most stunning black and white artwork arguably ever committed to the page. And that is unique, and it does not happen, and it increasingly doesn't happen anymore, and it's a real shame. So yeah, Lorenzo's right, we're lucky to have a kind of a relationship that we've built over the last 8-9 years, and to get to a point now where we just try and out-wow each other. I think that's the point. I try and get a giggle and blow something up, and he tries to draw it, which is the most important.
Cool, thanks a lot, guys.
Absolute pleasure, thank you.
The graphic novels Monkey Nuts Volume 1 and Baggage are available now from all good bookshops, and if you're lucky, they may still have a handful of signed copies at Daunt Books in Holland Park, London, where today's interview was recorded. Robin and Lorenzo also do signings at most of the big comic book conventions around the country, the next being Thought Bubble in Leeds on the 19th and 20th of November, where on stage I'll be interviewing Tim Sale, the award-winning comic book artist who contributed artwork to the TV series Heroes, and also to the creators of the anthropomorphic comic Elephant Men, which is best described as a cross between Blade Runner and the Island of Dr. Moreau. Before that, there are a handful of comic book events taking place in London. Canadian cartoonist Anders Nilsson will be signing in Gosh Comics in Berwick Street at 6 p.m. on Saturday the 15th of October as part of a UK tour that sees him visit Page 45 in Nottingham on Sunday the 16th and OK Comics in Leeds on Monday the 17th. He then gets a day off before coming back to London to do a Q&A at Orbital Comics on Wednesday the 19th of October, where he'll be chatting to British cartoonist Tom Gould. Also at Orbital Comics on Great Newport Street in London on Sunday the 29th of October, Mike and Laura Allred will be doing a signing of their work, including the pop art classics Madman and Ecstatics. Then, on Thursday, November the 3rd, at the impossibly fashionable bar Jaguar Shoes, 32 Kingsland Road, Shoreditch, the publishers of Luke Pearson's books, Nobrow Press, will be launching their new anthology from 6:30 p.m. More info about events at Gosh can be found at www.goshlondon.com, while the Anders Nilsson Q&A at Orbital and the Nobrow relaunch can be found at www.comicafestival.com. Panel Borders was recorded, introduced and edited by Alex Fitch, and you can find an extended version of tonight's show and all previous episodes on my blog, www.panelborders.wordpress.com, with the next episode back on air next Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Resonance 104.4 FM. Thanks for listening.